Okay, I guess we can start now. It's quarter past. Let's wait until everyone has a seat. Welcome to our, it's quite loud. I don't know how to change the volume, so I just put this down. Welcome to our first lecture in the course XML Theory and Practice. We are, for your convenience, recording all of these lectures. So in the Optima system, we are going to provide a link so you can watch all the lectures online as well. I think that's a quite nice thing. Luckily, everything, or hopefully the recording works now. So we have this lecture with two colleagues of mine. I'm Philipp Holtkamp. We have Henri Pirkkalainen and Toni Taipalus. I will get to that very soon. Just a little hint in the start. This theory and practice course in XML has replaced some previous XML courses. So if you have done the XML Kieli or Introduction to XML, unfortunately you cannot take part in this course, but I think as those courses were last time offered 3 or 4 years ago, that shouldn't be the case. So let me say something about Henri, my colleague, and me. We are both working at the Department of Computer Science and Information Systems here at the University of Jyväskylä. Henri got his doctorate degree last year. We are working both in the group of global information systems, which got a bit smaller over the last couple of years, starting with 7 people. Now we are just 3 or 4 people left. But what we mainly do is we look at global issues of software development, knowledge management, etc. And we run a lot of different projects. So both of us, we are actually project researchers doing a lot of practical work in European projects with other universities and companies around Europe, but also in Asia and the US. I'm myself a Master of Science in Information Systems, hopefully soon to be a doctor. And I am originally from Germany, where I did my master's at the University of Münster, and moved here to the University in Jyväskylä in 2008. And our full team, you can see here, Professor Jan Pawlowski, who is just now 20% here at the university, and the ones you can find here are me, Henri, and our colleague Kati. So, as I said, we do different projects. Here's a list of projects and topics we are looking into. While our main focus is the global aspects of software development, knowledge management, etc., the key aspect of many of our projects is actually e-learning. And you will see that we use some examples during this course from our projects, especially the OpenSCHOOL project, which was one of our biggest e-learning projects, just to show how XML can be used in practice, what can be done with XML, where we can encounter XML just by browsing the web, etc. So let's get to the practical aspects of this course. The course has 4 credit points, you probably know that. We will have six lectures and 2 guest lectures. If you looked at the schedule, the guest lecturers are one of our colleagues actually here from the university, but he has a lot of experience in software architecture and related issues. And he will give an introduction of how XML is used in software architecture, in different web services, service calls for the communication between systems. And then the second guest lecture is by a manager of one company of the region, and he will go in more detail of those kind of web services with XML. So it's more on the practical side how XML can be applied in organizations, etc. Then we have four exercises, or four mandatory exercises in this course. I will tell you something about that very soon. And of course, an exam. You can see all the dates there. The lectures are given in English. The exercises are, texts are also in English. But of course, as this is a bachelor level course, the exam is in Finnish or English. So during the exam, you have the choice which you want to use. We already set the exam dates. So the first exam is on the 11th of December, and then you can see the reruns. More information you can find from the Corpi system, where you remember also have to sign up for the exams. Every year we have the situation that some students didn't sign up for the exam, and then it causes some problems. And we also have an Optima space. I don't know, Henry sent an email today if you have seen that. All of you should have access to it by now, where you can find additional information about the course, where the slides are published usually before the lecture. So there you can get all the information. There is a course script available, etc. But what we will do in this course is we really just cover the basics of XML with a special focus on how XML can be used in an organization, in a practical environment. So, of course, during the exercises and the exams and also during the lectures, we will look at XML documents, we will write, create some own languages, etc. But the main focus is really to understand the XML concepts, to understand why do you need XML, for what can you use XML, what can you do with it, why is it important for you to know what it is. And I think that's highly important, because we see it in our projects. Even if we manage the projects and are not the developers, it's very important for us to be able to at least understand the XML documents, to talk to the developers in the project, to be able to speak their language and discuss on the documents with them. Then we have here the Interpret EBNF, Extended Bacchus-Naur Form. I can warn you already, EBNF is horrible. But you don't have to worry, because we won't ask anything about that in the exam. So EBNF is a specific form to describe, how to say it, like algebras or something like that. And unfortunately, this form is used to write the XML specification, so the official document where all rules for XML are specified. So, of course, we have to cover it to some extent, but for you, if you understand EBNF, and I can tell you I didn't while I was studying, it will help you. It's not something we will check or anything, but if you understand it, you will be able to read the XML specification, which gives very clear rules how XML should be written. And one important thing about this is that during the exam, you will get the relevant parts of the XML specification. So if you know EBNF, you basically have, if you have to write an XML document or some grammar specification, you have everything you need to know on paper already. It's just a horrible language that if you understand it, you have all the answers there. But if you don't understand it, don't worry too much. It's XML itself is actually very simple. So then we go to just not just writing XML documents, but writing DTDs. So DTDs is DTD is one form where you define how an XML document looks like. We will get to that later. And then different ways to use XML. So, of course, as with many all technologies, there are many different ways how you can apply it. Here you can see we grayed out the EBNF because it's not that relevant. Here is the course structure. So today we do the introduction to the course. That's what we are doing right now. And just some basics of XML. What does XML mean? Where is it coming from? On Thursday, we will continue with it. And then the lectures will be every Tuesday. And on Thursday will be the exercises. The exercises means you have demonstration sessions here. Usually, you will have to do some task at home. And if you have problems, questions, etc., the Thursday is the day where our colleague Tony will be here to demonstrate what would be or could be right solutions, what are problems that people ran into, answer questions, etc. The next lectures will be then the logical structure, then the physical structure. You don't have to understand yet what they mean. And then XML in organizations. What we have in this course are, first of all, of course, the slides. They are the main source of information for you. They are available in Optima, as I said before. And since last year, we decided to add a course book, Beginning XML. I think it's a very good book. It's freely available as an e-book for all students of the university through this link. So if you get the slides, then you should be able to get it. And then just some additional readings like the XML specification in this wonderful EBNF form and some other aspects. So the course book is very extensive. They explain a lot of things. They go in many aspects to a lot higher detail level than we do in this course and go a lot further. So at the end of each lecture, on the last slide, you will see which sections of the book refer to the content that we had in the lecture. But it's also a very well-explained book. They have very good examples in the book and give good explanations, good reasoning, and I think it makes it a lot easier to understand what you are supposed to do or what XML is all about. But, of course, it's an additional resource. You don't need to read the book to be able to pass this course. What you need to pass this course are the exercises. So every week there will be one mandatory plus additional task for bonus points. We have then in total four mandatory exercises, and those have to be passed to be allowed to participate in the exam. I know as a student it feels like, oh shit, I have to do more work, but please don't try to not see it that way, because from our experience we really learned over the course of teaching this course, which we are doing now for 5 years, that in this course in the lectures we talk about the theoretical aspects, we can show you some things, but to really learn how to handle XML, you have to do it. You have to just try to write some documents. You have to run into some errors. So I think it's really, really helpful to do it. And we saw that after introducing these exercises, the percentage of students passing the exam went, I think, from 50 to 80% or something like that. So it's really helpful if you do them. We then have 8 additional exercises to improve your grade. So you don't have to do them, but you can do them. For those exercises, you get points. And if you pass the exam, so you still need to get 50% of the points in the exam, but if you pass them, you get the points from the exercise additionally. So if you pass with 50 points, which would be a 1, but you did all the additional exercises, you get 15 points additional. So you definitely minimum increase your grade by 1 through these points. The maximum of the exam is 100, the maximum with the bonus points is 115, but it doesn't give you a better grade than 5.
How about those?
Let's say we just had one who got that. So if you get that, you can join us in our office for a coffee. I don't know if that's something nice or more like a punishment, but we can do that. So there are the first exercise, the mandatory one, is just graded as pass-fail, and for the two additional ones, you get 2 points, and the last one, 1.5 points per exercise. We usually try to have the structure in a way that always what is discussed on Tuesday in the lecture will be part of the new exercise. Then, to make it easier for us, you can do the assignment also in groups up to 5 people. Because even now, when the course is not mandatory anymore, I think there were 130 people registered for the course. And if Tony has to check 130 exercises every week, I think that's all he's going to do during that time. And so you can do it up to 5 people. And then the deadline for each exercise is the day before the corresponding feedback session. So if this feedback session for exercise 1 is on Thursday, on Wednesday is the deadline. We nowadays are quite flexible, so if you miss a deadline, it doesn't mean you automatically fail, it just means you have to do some more work to make up for missing the deadline. You can, of course, still choose to fail instead if that's what you want. So in the exercises, first it's just the basics of XML, extensible markup language, then more about it, then the document type definition, and then XSL and simple object access protocol, so these are the topics. I think the overall outline of the exercises is already available in Optima. I think Tony uploaded that, so if you want, you can browse through it already. Don't worry if you don't understand it yet. I hope we will get you there. And in the exercise sessions on Thursdays, starting next week, the previous exercise will be discussed. There will be feedback for what was done, what was going wrong, what was going well. Different examples how to handle the task, because XML, there is not one right and many wrong ways. There are many, many right and many wrong ways. So we can't say this is the one solution. We have to look at all of them individually. In the exercises, then, if you have some very specific questions, you can come to, well, also after the lectures, you can come to me or my colleagues if you have questions, or to our office on the 5th floor. And the exercises are not necessarily full lectures, because these sessions are for you. So we sometimes had students complaining that the lecture just took 1 hour instead of 1.5 hours. But if all mistakes could be explained in 1 hour, or everything could be sorted out, all questions could be answered, doesn't make sense to keep you longer in here. And as I said before, we think it's very important to do the exercise well and actually to do them yourself, to be at least involved in them. In the exam, because my Finnish sucks, I usually look at the more practical parts. I usually can see pretty clearly on those who has done the exercises and who hasn't, because you can see that those tasks in the exams where you have to write an XML document, if you have done the exercises, those are no problem for you. So that's why we suggest to be involved in doing these exercises and don't just write your name on the paper of someone who's doing them. Of course, you can do that. There is no way for us to check it besides the exam in the end.
Question.
Yeah?
Where do we return the exercises? Not
The exercises, it's in the instructions of the exercises. The exercises are returned by email to Tony. And there is for each exercise clear instructions how to return them, because usually you are also supposed to validate the exercises yourself. So if you write an XML document, there are validators who show you, okay, everything is fine. And that statement, everything is fine, should then be provided as well at the same time. But all those informations are in this one PDF document. It should be in the exercise folder in Optima already. There is a course website, but you don't find a lot more information than you find in this slide set, and of course all the material in Optima. What we started last year, and I think it's a very nice practice, is that throughout the course we switch from the slide set actually to an XML editor, and with you in the lecture look at XML, if we change something, how does it affect it, etc., so that we have some practical parts in the lecture as well. So that's why we encourage you to bring your own device and during the lecture try out XML. You know, play with it. If we introduce something new, try out what happens if you change parts of an XML document, etc. The examples that we use during the course, the XML documents, DTDs, etc., will all be available in Optima. There are really many XML editors out there that you can use. We use Eclipse because for Mac it's much harder to find something, and we are just used to Eclipse. When you download Eclipse, make sure you download the IDE including the XML editor, because otherwise there is no XML support in Eclipse. But there are others, and many others as well, and you can basically use whatever you want. In terms of the XML validator, basically all XML editors include an XML validator, but be very, very careful with them, because for many of them, even if it's labeled validator, it's not a validator, it checks something else. That's why for the exercises, always use the online available World Wide Web Consortium validator. It's just a box where you can copy-paste your XML document in and press a button or upload a document. So it's very simple. So for the Eclipse, I can quickly or not go through it. This is what Eclipse looks like. We have XML examples here. And this is what an XML document, if you haven't seen one yet, looks like. This is a very, very simple one, and you can see if you use an XML editor, you have the advantage that different aspects are highlighted, so it makes it a lot easier to look at the syntax and see what are different aspects. And you have nice things like the design, so you can just see what belongs where, etc. So that's why we suggest to use a real XML editor. Okay, but I think this is enough about all the administrative stuff of this course. First of all, let me ask, how many of you know XML sounds weird, have heard about XML in any kind of context? Okay. Can any one of you tell me where you have come across XML? Did you work with XML? Did you just read something about it, hear something, or? Yeah?
Well, I've used XML for configuring stuff.
Okay. Okay, if you done a lot of that, this course might be quite boring for you, because we don't go very far in XML, but don't worry. Anyone else? Because basically, whenever we open a web page, we get in contact with XML, or an XML-related language, because XML, I start with point four now, is a meta language. What does that really mean? It means it's a language itself, but it's a language to define languages. So what we do with XML, we create our own language. We create our own grammar for the language, and the computer understands this language then. That's the key of XML, that we have a language that we can use for whatever we want, because we can completely freely define our own languages in it. The important thing to remember there is when we here talk about language, XML in that sense is not programming. It's not a programming language. It's a markup language. So the most well-known XML language, so language that was created in XML, is XHTML. I guess most of you have heard about that one. We can use it for many, many different ways. We can use it for any kind of purpose. And you will see that in this course. And XML itself is very simple, but the applications of XML might not be. So writing a language based on just XML is very, very, very easy, but the real world that we somehow have to want to represent through this XML document might not be very, very simple. If you want to configure something, for example, you might have many sub-things to configure, etc., but the main structure of the XML document is actually very simple, but the semantics behind it and what we have to think about and what belongs where might be very complex. So that's of course, in a way nice, because XML is simple. We don't have to learn a lot when dealing with XML. We also have to learn how to think in XML, how different aspects belong together. XML basically is a set of rules or guidelines or however how to define a language that the computer can understand. And the primary purpose why XML was developed is to help computers to share data, for us to communicate with a computer, or for two computers, two systems to communicate with each other. That's the main purpose or the original purpose of XML, which was changed over the time. This full meta-language aspect is not an entirely new concept. It's used also in high school. It's used in different aspects. For example, here we have it sometimes in school. We have to analyze a poem, and we have to learn a very specific language how to analyze a poem. There is symbolism, etc., and we use those words to describe the language used in a poem. Or in other aspects, we have other language constructs that we learn, specific aspects of a language to describe another language. Something like a grammar rules, for example. We use language to describe another language. It sounds really, this meta, I remember when I was studying, we had one lecturer who loved meta. He was doing models, and then he was doing meta models, and meta meta models, and meta 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 models. So a meta meta model is a model to define how to define a model that could define a model. I don't know if you have to go that far, but the idea is that you use XML to define a custom text sets, text sets get called languages. So if you think about HTML for the ones who know it. You have the opening tag head, closing tag head, body, etc. Those are the tags, and the full set of the tags is then a language. And the language can be built for anything, for problem domains, application, markets, information collection, etc., which is also represented. We have many different XML languages that are standardized. They can be for any kind of purpose. You can have them for the full newspaper industry, or you can just have them for one very specific system in one organization. It's a very flexible way. And again, XML is not a programming language. So, what does XML stand for? Extensible Markup Language. The extensible basically refers to this meta language. We can extend it as much as we want. We can, even if we use a standardized XML language, we can add whatever we want, we can take stuff away, we can change everything. It will still be understood. Might be a bit problematic with communicating with another system, but we can do whatever we want, and we can create, or the main purpose is to create own languages. So that's what the extensible part is about. And the main purpose was for communicating and representing information with the emerging of the internet. When we look at the history a bit of XML, I don't know if there are slides tomorrow, but there was something before XML which was called SGML, which was not extensible in the same sense, so it was much more strict, and that caused problems with changes with internet, with changes in technologies, etc. People couldn't adapt everything on the fly. You probably know the differences, or some of you might know the differences between HTML, XHTML, etc. So HTML itself was an SGML language, HTML is an XML-based language, and those differences. Data is usually exchanged as XML documents, so if we have something written which includes XML text, it's called an XML document. And we have then a systematic way to mark different aspects of it. When we look at, for example, this one, it's a XML document for a poem. You don't have to understand everything right now. The upper part here is the so-called DTD, so it defines the language. This small part is everything that defines a language. It's the own language we have defined. And it has different tags that we define here. We define which content the text can have. And then we write down here, this is then the full thing, the XML document. And here you can see we have the opening tag, closing tag, and we have the full tag set defined by this grammar. So that is what is called a language. This is a very simple example. We will get into that in detail very soon. But you can see here already that we, as humans, give meaningful names to the tags. You know, we know here, okay, this tag is called author. So the text in there will be the author of the poem, most likely. Or we give the date, etc. So we can provide more information about it. And we can provide information that then a computer can process. Of course, if we write date, the computer won't understand that it's a date. With other languages with other ways to define the language, we can actually do that, but we won't go that far in this course. But the computer knows at least that this is an own field. So this is what XML looks like, and you will see it's not as complicated as it might seem. One problem of having a course like this is that in XML everything is linked together. It's not like in many other aspects, like when teaching Java or something like that, that you can build on different aspects. But the main problem is that if you want to write an XML document, you basically need to know everything at once. And there is no incremental way. So that's why it might seem in the start that there is a lot of information at the same time. But when you actually get to work with XML, you will see it's much easier than it sounds. So today, I will mainly focus on how XML can be used, because I think that's a very important aspect to understand. The main use is to format, store persistent information in organizations. We can have it as documents, metadata, or data, or in XML-based databases. Or we can use it as a data interchange between applications. You all probably heard about web services, web applications that call another service, etc. In most cases, this communication between different services is done using XML by sending information from one system to another. And by using this kind of XML language, the system understands, because both systems know the grammar of this language, both systems understand which part of the document means what, or what do they have to process, what do they have to look at. As a document format, so if we think about this example, the poem, we can think about this as an XML document, as a usage of an XML document format. So, for example, we have an online registry or online a web page, and we store poems on that web page. We can store any other content as well, but in this case, we store poems, and we want to make it easy for users to find different poems. If we would use a pure text search, we would have to search through a lot of text. But if we know and tell the computer, okay, this field actually is the author. So if then the user searches for someone, author Edgar Allan Poe, then the system just has to search in this one field and can easily show, okay, all these poems are from Edgar Allan Poe, similar to the date, etc. So it makes the information retrieval a lot easier in systems, in storage, in web pages, etc. And that's how it is used in many, many different ways. When you search for scientific material, you usually search for authors, for publication, for journal, etc. And all these information can then be stored in an XML document and can easily and very fast retrieved, even if we have to search for in millions of documents. And also, what it also does, it can provide additional information to us as the user. If we think about, we are a software developer, we come new to an organization, they have many, many documents stored. And we are not sure in those documents, for example, documentation of the software program, where what kind of information is. If they are stored in an XML document, they might have speaking tags. They might use then also something like this procedure is here. So it's also for us very much easier to understand different things. So that's why XML is usually the predominant form as a document format to give additional information. And it's used in web publishing. Most web pages use some form of XML language. We use it for learning materials. We use it for technical documentations, dictionaries, wherever information is stored and wherever we need to retrieve this kind of information. I think even Optima stores it as XML. And this approach of structured documents is also adopted in the document management of organizations. If we think about in organizations, there might be a lot of documents, etc. And the organization with this XML, because it's a meta language, each organization can create their own language. So they can create their own tags and with that highlight what is actually relevant for them in a specific text. What would users, what would the employees have to search for? What kind of information do they have to retrieve? So they, by understanding this, what kind of the user needs, we can create very targeted languages. Okay, but let's get to some examples. Normal web page in XHTML. We get to see them every day, basically, when surfing the internet. And it's an XML-based language. If we look at a normal code, you can see we have also here the head, closing, title, giving the title of the page, body means we give the content of the page, etc. So if we compare it to the poem, it looks actually very similar. It always has this same structure of we open tags, we close tags again, and what is within this opening and closing tags belongs as a content to it. And that's basically all that XML does. It provides the rules how to develop this kind of language. And that has a lot of benefits for all kind of users. For example, something we all know, if we look at Word. MS Word 2000 used the .doc ending. If you used at that time Word a lot, or also wanted to use a different operating system than Windows, or just a different word processing tool than MS Word, you all know that there were a lot of problems in interpreting it. If you moved from Word even to, at that time, OpenOffice or something like that, it might destroy a lot of your formatting. And the reason for that was the doc files were binary code. They were stored in as binary files. And that was a closed format. So just Microsoft knew how to read this binary code. And that's why no other software could really fully support the doc files. With the Word 2007, Microsoft changed to .docx, which is an XML-based format, actually Office Open XML format. You can see this is now how a file looks like. So it's a completely open format, XML-based. There are already a lot of free or some free programs, but now it's possible to fully read the format. There is no hidden, closed information in the format anymore. So that's one of the key aspects that XML allows us. If we have a language that is known, so we have a known grammar for the language, the known DTD, which was the upper part here. So if this part is known to all systems, then all systems understand this language. And by moving to this kind of this format, Microsoft allowed that all other systems can understand the language that is used to store the information in this document. And with that, the systems can communicate with each other in a way that System B understands everything that is done in System A. And that goes beyond, of course, word processing. You can have it for any kind of system. If we think about the web services, one common way is the SOAP web services. All systems that use web service basically understand it. So if we send a request to that system, the system will understand it, and that allows us to transfer data from one system, from one tool to another, without losing any information because it's closed in. And that's the main reason why XML gains more and more popularity as a document format, besides the other obvious that I discussed before. Another aspect is XML can be a metadata format. Some of those aspects I discussed before already, but we can store additional information about a document. If we remember the poem, we store the author, the date, those kind of things additionally. If we look at it again, we can see that we store here language English. So we store the information, okay, this poem is in English. We store here the information, okay, this is the first stanza of the poem, so the first part of it, etc. So we can store a lot more information. We can store information, how was it created, when was it created, why was it created, who created it, etc. In many cases, the metadata about a document are as important, if in some cases not even more important, than the content of the document itself. Because it allows us to control the different knowledge. Here is one example from one of our e-learning projects. So this is the Open Scout project. In the Open Scout project, we created a web portal to retrieve freely available management learning content from the internet. And this learning content could come from whatever source, be in any kind of format, etc. So for the user, it was, of course, very important to know which language is the content in, which format is it, on which educational level was it used, etc. So a lot of information that the user needed to know to make sense of or to understand, is this actually useful for me or is it not? And there is a standard which is called LOM, Learning Object Metadata, which provides a lot of this information. In a later lecture, we can look at one of those files, but basically, LOM provides exactly the information, who designed it, in which language, for which purpose, what kind of content is it? Is it a video or a document or anything? And this allows us to give easier access, again, to the information. If I have internet here, I can actually... No. So this is the web page that came out in the end. And you can see here, I hope it's working now, because, yep. You can see here, for example, a type of faceted search. The documents are classified by language, in which format they are, what type they are, so are they videos or slides, what kind of competences are connected to the learning object, etc. And then we can just say, okay, I just want Spanish material, I just want PowerPoint presentations, etc., and then the system can automatically show you all this. And if we then look at one of the things, we can see here a lot of metadata about it. So part of the metadata can also then be ratings, user tags, etc. So it provides a lot of information around the actual document that can be useful for a user. That's the idea of metadata. And for information retrieval, quite often this information can be more important than the content itself, because nowadays in many different aspects, it's important to provide the right information to the right user at the right time. We do it in the learning environment. In another project, we did it in marketing automation. So provide the right kind of advertisements to the right user at the right time, etc. For this, there are other XML languages out there. So XML can also be used, for example, to monitor the user behavior of a user on a web page so that we can exactly see the click patterns of a user or how long he stayed on specific pages, what did he look at, etc., to get more information. So XML is extremely versatile and can provide us there a lot of input. And one really, really big advantage in this OpenSCHOLAR project by using XML metadata, an XML metadata format. The XML metadata can be separated from the real document. So it doesn't have to be in the real document. So in our case, we have over 70,000 different metadata files in our repository. If we would have the real content, 70,000 documents, videos, etc., we would need a huge amount of storage. But with this metadata storage, we can just have this small document, and the document then contains a link to the original material. So the user is just referred to the original source. We don't have to do additional storage. We then can use XML as a data interchange format. So we can, as we had the example before, exchange information between heterogeneous systems. We can exchange information from one word processing like Microsoft Word to OpenOffice, or from one web service to another. We can exchange information between organizations. We can send resources around, etc. These data interchange formats are meant for applications, not for humans. So if we look at a SOAP file, it's usually not very easy to understand exactly what is happening. We can understand, okay, this is the head, this is the body, this is maybe a call, but what exactly is in there is meant for a computer, not for us. And because XML is a meta language, XML offers a syntax to develop this kind of common format for data exchange. As I said before, if we develop a language and our system knows the language and another system knows the language, they can exchange documents between each other because they both understand them. We see it with small children. Small children usually come up with their own language and hope their parents don't understand that, and they believe they are the only ones who understand that language. But because both know the rules for this language, they can communicate in it. And the same goes with XML. We create our own language. Sometimes we hope that nobody else will understand it because we want to be secure. But the systems can communicate. We can communicate with the computer. We can tell the computer how to adjust settings, etc. And also this XML as a data interchange format we use on a daily basis. Every one of us nowadays has a smartphone. Usually our smartphone is synchronized with our computer. Calendars are synchronized, emails are synchronized, everything. This is not done by exchanging the full document, sending it from the computer to the mobile device, but just by XML documents, tell them, okay, there was a change, please adjust this. So for the calendar synchronization, there is a specific XML language. And if we have, for example, a Google Calendar on the web, then we get the can get the iCal file to directly put it in our local calendars, etc. So those are just small XML documents that allow us to transport the information of one system to another because both understand the same language that someone created. And you can see because of this, it's very important in many aspects to have standards, to have standardized XML languages. Because standardized XML languages mean it's a language that most systems should understand. If every software developer would produce, again, their own XML languages, we would be at the old Microsoft Word problem again. If we develop an own XML language, OpenOffice has their own XML language, etc., then that doesn't help us. But by standardizing these languages and saying, okay, this is now the de facto standard, everyone who has a word processing should support this, we enable the transfer of information between the systems. Then there are languages like SyncML, which allows us to synchronize data between different devices. So we can sync actually binary files, we can sync contacts, calendars, etc. Most mobile developers, providers support this. So you can see XML can be used for basically whatever we want it to use for. Because XML is so flexible, because XML is extensible, because XML is a meta language. We define our own language and we can use it. And if we don't want to, and what kind of language we develop depends on our purpose. If we don't want to communicate with another system, we can just develop our own XML language. If we just want to use it for data retrieval, we just have a local system in our library, for example, to find books in the library. We don't communicate with anyone else in the world. We can just define our own language, and we can have all the information available. Or, because it is extensible, we can just use the language someone else developed and adjust it to our needs. Do we need additional tags that are not in the original? So if I would be publishing a poem, and this is what someone else used, and I want, for some reason, to also have the country of the author, then I could just edit. And it's done. Now I can add here. Now I change the rules of the language. I added a new element, which is the country. I just have to also add it here so that it belongs to the element poem, has country included. So now I could just add here country UK, country USA, whatsoever, whatever I want. And this is perfectly fine. So you can see, if we have some example, it's very simple, very easy to just add some new field if you want to store some more information about the document. And now, of course, we couldn't communicate with the other system because they wouldn't understand this field. But for our local system, it would be no problem. And that's the key of XML. We can adjust, we can write our own language. So this is the language poem. And that's what the meta language means. We define our own language. We define our own set of rules here, which you don't have to understand yet. We will go through them next week. And that's how we can use it. So we can do whatever we want with it, basically, for any kind of purpose. We just have to understand what do we actually want. So, and of course, if we define then a good language, someone, and we publish it, someone else might say, oh, this makes sense, we use the same. And or we submit it to a standardization body and say, hey, you of all people publishing poems online, you should decide that all people use this XML language now. And if everyone does it, we can easily exchange information. So, in terms of benefits, XML provides a lot of benefits for organizations. First of all, it allows us to define our own data formats. And we have tools to read, write, and transform data from XML to other formats, but also we can collect data very easily. If you think about when you browse online, you quite often come across some kind of forms where they ask you, please put in your first name, last name, email address, etc. Usually those are XML-based. That means the information you put in there are stored in an XML document, which is predefined. So someone defined a language saying, okay, we need to have a first name, we need to have a last name, etc. You can then specify which of those have to be there, which of those don't have to be there in a form usually, which are required, which are not required, etc. So you can give the information there, and then it's stored in an XML document and immediately can be transferred to another application which will understand the information, will know which part of the document means what, etc. So that's, for example, a very typical way how to automatically create XML documents for customers, contacts, and so on. So then if we use a standardized language for it, we can exchange the information. Usually we shouldn't necessarily exchange our customer information with someone else, but we are able to do that. If it's, for example, other information that are stored there, we can exchange them. We then can have XML. When we use XML inside a single application, I talked about that quickly before, we don't need to share information, but we can use it for information retrieval, or if we store information and we know, okay, maybe we want to have it in a way that we can easily add things. Like, we know eventually we want to store more information. We can add that later without a lot of maintenance work. And then we have content delivery. So XML supports different users and channels. How many of you, or who of you has experience with web development, websites? How many of you have actually used different devices to display the information? Like, with XML, you can write the content in one document, and you can attach different style sheets for it. So you have seen that probably on many web pages. When you go to it with your computer, it looks different than when you go to it with your mobile device. With XML, the content document is exactly the same, just the attached style sheets are different, and the system automatically recognizes, okay, this is a mobile device connecting, so I use this kind of layout. This is a computer connecting, so I use this kind of layout. That makes it very easy for a developer because you just define the style sheets one time. Every XML document can be displayed in that way. So you don't have to redundantly write how to display it. for different devices, and you just need one content. Otherwise, you could, for example, have one document having the layout information and content for a computer and the layout information and content for the mobile device. But if you want to change the content, you have to change it in both systems. With this, you have one content, and then you can just change it once, and it changes everywhere automatically. So that's what it means. It supports different users and channels. You can even go further. I know in the learning environment systems that change the user interface based on the age of the user. Or if we want to look at accessibility, if we have a blind user, things might be have to be displayed, presented differently. If we have a deaf user for videos, they might have to present differently. And if we have the information of the user with XML, we can automatically do those changes because we can go those different paths that will be explained a bit later. So then, as you see, we can address multiple different devices, multiple different aspects. We can also really structure information very well for those information. We can say some parts should be left out on mobile devices, etc. So there are a lot of benefits. For me, the main benefit from a practical perspective from working in all those projects is and has been it's easy to communicate with about XML with, for developers from different countries because it's a very specific structured way. You define a language and everyone understands it. And in our projects, we have there are usually a lot of communication problems. If you imagine a software developer from Greece with a management professor from France communicating about the layout and content of a web portal, very funny discussions, like the professor just saying, we need a new button here. And the button should do the following things. And then the developer says, yeah, okay, but that needs about a month to implement it. And the professor just can't understand it and keeps saying, but you just have to make the button there. Why do you need so much time to do it? So there is such a different level of info of knowledge of different aspects that it's very hard for them to communicate. And if you use XML in a different format, so not in this format, but in this design format, here you can see, okay, we have a poem, and the poem consists of an author, now a country, which I just added, a date, title, and two stanzas. If you have something like this, everyone will understand, okay, there is some structure in it, and I understand the structure, and you can say, okay, but maybe here should be an additional stanza, or in our case, maybe we should add the country as a part of the poem as well. So it's much easier to communicate because you can visualize it and you have some communication aid. And that's, for me, a very, very important aspect that helped us a lot as well. Besides all those technical aspects. In this course, we will go through different examples. You have seen the poem example as well. So here is what the poem could look like if we display it. Another example that we want to go through or that we look at is a TV schedule. It's very well structured information, so it makes sense to store something like that in XML. We can display it then in different formats, etc. What I still want to show, if you haven't seen it yet, so in Optima, this is the current version. Every one of you should be here. So here are the assignments. You were asking about it. So Here are all the information, what you should do, how you begin, more information about how they will be graded, how you should submit them, etc. So that's all the information that is there already. After each Thursday session, Tony will upload also example answers, so if you have problems, you can look at them. We have then here the recommended reading. So there is a course script from a very old course that we still, from the previous course, created by Professor Airi Salminen, that exists in English and Finnish. So if you feel more comfortable with Finnish and you want to read about XML in Finnish, you have here the course script with six different parts. In this course, because it's a very old one, we changed some parts of the course, so some things became more important, others less important, but basically it has all the relevant information, also in Finnish. You have the course book, and you have support materials. So what we did about 5 years ago, we created example test questions. These are multiple choice questions, and they are just for you, you know, just what does XML always have, which of the following. So it's just an aid for you to see, did you understand everything that you are supposed to understand? Did you? And there are always also the right answers here provided. I'm always very surprised because, you know, if you know those, there aren't so many more things that we can ask for in an exam. We won't ask in the exam for it as multiple choice, but maybe a small essay or something like that. But these are the key information that should be in there. And in this nice Optima system, we can see how many students open a document. And I'm always very surprised because I say this every year. Last year, we had 180 students registered for the course, 130 or 40 for the exam, and 65 opened these documents. I don't understand why. I'm just telling you it's a good way to check your own knowledge, to get to know XML a bit, or to see, do you understand the concepts, etc. Because the exam will consist, or always consist of two parts. The first part is more the theoretical part, so just an open question, not that it will be this one, but what is XML? I think for that you will have to write a very lot, but anyway, just some open questions, and then the second part is something where you have to write a DTD and an XML. So DTD, sorry, when I refer to it many times. DTD is this type, this part. Everything that is in the brackets with doc type. That is the DTD. So the DTD is the grammar, the part where we define the language. In the logical structure lectures, we will get into that. One important thing I can tell you now already, we use DTD in this course because it's the simplest way. In practice, it's basically not used anymore. Because of some, well, not because it's bad, but because there are much better solutions. So there are other ways to define grammars that allow us much more. So that allow us actually to say something is of the type date, something is of the type integer, so we can really say what kind of data is expected in this field, what kind of data do we expect. But you can see this is a poem, and if we look, for example, at invoice element, this is an invoice. You can see it looks very similar. You have, again, opening text, closing text that belong together. You can look at, there is a structure, you have a header with other elements under it, etc. So all XML documents more or less look the same, even if this is a completely different language. And also all grammar rules look very, very similar. But we will get to them when we are done, when we are in the next lecture. So I think this was enough information for the first lecture, even if we are not at the end of the time, still have 15 minutes. If you want to read more about it, in the old course script, it's part one in the Optima system I just showed, available in English and Finnish, or in the book, it's chapter 1, page 3 to 24, the basics. So, any questions still at this point, or otherwise, just don't worry too much, even if it's a lot of information in the beginning. It really is a lot easier in practice than it sounds. Thank you.